So where we lo left off was the beginning. We talked about Yeshua Achan's violation of the cherem. We'll come back to that in a moment, and we have this battle of Ai. Actually, I wanted to pull up one thing here. I don't think this has the map. No. So let me just pull up a map for you so you can see what we're talking about. Become relevant for a second in a second. Come on. All right, there we go. Can everybody see the map? So base camp for Yeshua is here in Yericho or outside of Yericho in a place called Gilgal. At the end of Perek Chet, they're going to go up to Shechem. There's an entire ceremony with of this with the stones and the blessings and the curses, Hagriza Marevel. They're heading up to Shechem. If you look at the map, you can see that you, kind of to get to Shechem, you have to head west and then go along the mountain road at the top of the mountain, sort of pass to get to Shechem. You sort of pass nearby Ai. Ai isn't exactly. It's pretty close. I don't, you could theoretically go up the Jordan River Valley and then cut across this way, or you could go up the mountain and head that way. Either way, Ai is they're heading to Shechem. The question of whether Ai is on the way or not, somewhat of a debate in the Gemara. We'll see in a few moments. But be that as it may, Yeshua sends spies to check out Ai. They come back with the report. Ai is in what they call easy pickings. They send. Two or three, they sent 3,000 men, or approximately 3,000, and we talked about the phrase that approximately 36 died. Kishloshim v'shisha ish. And what that meant for Israel, they were pursued and they ran away. The people were melted, their hearts were melted. The first defeat, and we spent some time last week talking about the approximately 36. We suggested that it meant all 36, but each what was that the 36 was essentially three units of 12, 12 being a unit we saw elsewhere in the story of in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, and that all 36 of the front line were destroyed, and then the rest of the people more or less broke ranks and were either fled or were pursued. And that brings us to Pasuk Vav. Okay, everybody with me? We're good. Vayikra Yehoshua Simlotav. Yeshua tears Kriya. He tears Kriya not just because of the loss of life, but because of the defeat in the battle, clearly. Vayipol Panav Artzalif Neron Hashem Ata'erev. And he falls on his face and he's crying out to God and he's crying before the ark. Hu v'ziknei Yisrael v'yalu afar Rosham. They put ashes or dust on their heads. Vayomer Yehoshua. Aha Hashem Elokim. Woe, alas, Hashem God. Lama avarta havirata amazeta yarden. Why did you bother taking us over the Jordan? Latetu talibiyad emorila avidenu, just to hand us over to the Amorites that they should kill us? Viluha alnu venesha be'ever heyarden. Would it have not been better for us to remain on the other side of the Jordan? Bi Hashem, ma'amar, achve asher afach Yisrael oref lifnei oyvav. What am I going to say, God, now after Israel has turned their backs and fled before their enemies? V'yishmua Knani, and the Knanites, what will they say? They will hear about it? And the gig's over. V'cho yishvei ha'aretz, v'nasabu aleinu, they will turn against us. V'chvitu et shmeinu min ha'aretz, they'll destroy us. Ma ta'aseh l'shimcha gadol? And what, God, will you do with your great name? Quite an intense response of Yeshua. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it today, but maybe at some point in the future we'll have a chance to analyze Yeshua's leadership style and how it differs from Moshe. But one thing to observe here is that the argument that Yeshua makes is a combination of arguments inherited from Moshe's defense of Israel. What will you do with your great name if the Canaanites destroy us? Mayamru Mitzrayim, what will Egypt say? What will the Canaanites say? It's an argument we've heard Moshe say? But there's also this, why did you take us over the Jordan? Why did you bring us into the land of Israel? Why did you bring us here to destroy us? Now, there's also the sense of the kind of argument or the kind of critique that you would find, that you would hear from Bnei Israel through the years in the desert. And a very intense response. Of course, God says to him, "Vayomer Hashem or Yeshua, Kumlach, get up. Lama zatana fell upon echa. Why do you fall upon your face? Chata Yisrael v'gam avuot b'tiyesh tziviti otam v'gam lakum in acherem v'gam ganvu v'gam kichash v'gam samu b'chlehem." Look what they've done. Israel has sinned. They've transgressed my brit, my covenant with them. They violated my commandments. They took of the cherem. They stole it. They denied stealing it. They hid it. They covered it up. And therefore, lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael lakum lifnei avehem, or if yifnu lifnei avehem, in such an environment in which they steal and in which they lie, in which they deny, in which they cover up, they will turn their backs to their enemies and they will flee. Ki hayu l'cherem, they will become a cherem. I will no longer be with you. Lo asif liyot imachem, imo tashmidu acherem mikirbechem. First destroy the cherem and then deal with I. And the rest of the parak will deal with how to deal with the cherem. We spent some time with that last week. I want to come back to God's response to Yeshua. It's fascinating. I would assume, based on what I'm reading here, that once they destroy the cherem, they've essentially, or destroyed the and killed the perpetrator of the person who violated the cherem, they've essentially dealt with the source of the problem. Right? Hashem says to Yeshua, the problem isn't me, and it's not the battle with I, the problem is that you're in violation of the cherem in Jericho. So deal with the cherem before you can deal with I. Agreed? That's more or less what God says. But there's something going on here that we're not hearing. We're not hearing. Why do I say that? If this is the case, that the issue lies solely with Achan and the violation of the cherem, after you've destroyed the cherem and after you've destroyed Achan, if you want to demonstrate that the problem lies in the violation of the cherem of Yericho, what should be the next step after this parak? What should we hear next?
That Hashem forgave.
Hashem forgave, and therefore what should they do with Ai?
They should go and win.
They should go and win. Now, if you want to create, if you want to identify the problem is Achan and the cherem, when you go back to fight against Ai the second time, what should be your battle plan? How many soldiers should you send the second time around? I'm going to make an assumption.
More than 3,000.
Well, I'm going to make an assumption. I'm going to make an assumption that if the problem was solely Achan's violation of the cherem, when you go back to fight either second time, you should send exactly the same number of soldiers with exactly the same battle plan. Because if you change the battle plan, then you don't demonstrate that the problem lies in Achan and his violation. You hear the problem? So now, wait a second. No, let me. If I stop for questions, I won't be able to finish.
Oh,
let me
sorry,
just finish
I'm
and
sorry.
Then you'll. And then
sorry,
we'll
sorry.
So let's look at Parakhat. And I'm going to read, if you don't mind, from Pasuk Zion straight to Perakhat. Pasuk Tet. V'shmu k'nani v'cho yoshvei aretz v'nesav bo'oleinu v'chvitu et shmeinu min aretz v'ma ta'aseh l'shimcha agadol. What will you do with your great name? Yeshua finishes his speech. I'm going to skip the rest of this parak and pretend we're going straight to Perakhat. Vayomer Hashem al Yoshua. Al tira, ve'al techat. Don't be afraid. Don't be dismayed. Kachimcha et kol am hamilchama. Take the entire nation to war. V'kuma leha'ai, go and attack Ai. Ve'enatati biyatchat melacha'ai ve'etamo ve'etiro ve'etatso, I'll give you Ai and his king and his people and his land all into your hands. V'yasita la'ai ulamalka, she'yasita li'yiricho ulamalka, and you will do to Ai and to her king what you did to Yericho and her king, rak shlalau ve'emtatavozu lechem, but the shalal I'm allowing you, the spoils here you can take. Just in Ai, just in Yericho it was forbidden. And here's the battle plan. I gave you the battle plan for Yericho. Now I'm giving you the battle plan for Ai. Set an ambush of the city and take, how many people does he take? So Yeshua went together with the the core of the army. Ivchar Yeshua 30,000. That's 10 times the number of soldiers they had when they went to war against Ai the first time. 10 times the army. Instead of 3,000, 30,000. Eishlachem Laila. And he sends them in the middle of the night in a secret mission. And he commanded them, and he said to them, Ru'u atem oruvim la'ir me'achoye'er, go and be in ambush behind the city. Al tarachikum in ha'ir mo'o, don't be too far away from the city. Just be ready. We and the rest of the people who are with me, we'll approach the city. And when the people of Ai will come out to attack us as they did originally, once again, we will turn and we will flee. We will turn our backs to them and we will run away as if we are afraid, because this is now is a ruse. They'll come running after us. And they'll chase us and we'll run. And we'll kind of bring them out of the protection of the walls of the city. They'll say that we are fleeing, but we should not like the first time. And we'll flee. And then you, v'atem takuma mi'ha'orev. So then you can come in from behind like an ambush. And conquer the city. And God will give you them into your hands. When you seize the city, set it on fire. Kedvar Hashem tasu. Rutzi v'tietchem, and do as God commands. See, I have commanded you. And thus the city will eventually, rest of the parak will eventually read and learn. I want to make point out one more observation, which is Pasuk Chaf Hey. But you call in a flim by Yom Mahu, this battle is very successful, and the total number of people who died from the Battle of Ai was 12,000. Kol Anshei Ha'ir, the people of the city numbered 12,000. So the problem here is, and again, it's both a tactical problem and a theological problem. By sending the entire army, 30,000 strong, you undermine your own message. If your message is that you are the only reason you lost the battle the first time was because you were in violation of the Cherem of Yericho, now when you go back and you've removed the violation, you've solved the problem, you've identified the core of the issue, in order to highlight that was the reason of divine providence because of the chait, you don't want to change the battle plan. You don't want to go second time with 30,000 when the first time with 3,000, because then you're going to say that, we won the second time not because of the cherem, we won the second time because we had 30,000 soldiers instead of 3,000 soldiers. So you've undermined your own message. It's a huge problem. Unless the problem in Perek Zion isn't just the Cherem of Yericho. In other words, it's very possible that there's more than one issue going on here. And that's what we need to identify. The Cherem of Yericho is one problem. Achan is one problem. But as we already identified and we asked last week, why should one person sin and all the people suffer? The defeat here is devastating. The entire conquest of Canaan happens differently because of this conquest, because of this defeat. So why, and Yeshua's explosion in Perek Zion, where he says to God, why did you, this is at the end of the conquest. Vayishmu Kanani, they'll destroy us. He's not so wrong. If it wasn't for a change of tactic, this would have been a defeat that could have defeated them. This was a Malek style of demonstrating that they're vulnerable. So just violation of the Cherem of Yericho doesn't seem to meet the criteria of a chet that would come to this kind of defeat. The punishment doesn't fit the crime. And especially after you've solved the crime, you've dealt with the Cherem, you shouldn't need to change the battle plan. From a divine perspective, from a perspective of divine providence, theology, you should have exactly the same battle plan. Otherwise, you've defeated your own message. So I want to argue, and that's what we're going to spend today's shiur looking at, that the issue is much bigger than Achan. Achan is only a small symptom of a much bigger issue. And that's what we've got to uncover. What's the bigger issue? And I want to actually start with the Meraglim. Yeshua sends spies. Right from the beginning. Spy missions are always trouble. Spy mission in Moshe's spy mission failed. Yeshua's spy mission, the first time he sent the spies to Yericho, that failed. Spy missions are dangerous. Vayishlach Yeshua anashim miYericho. Do you remember what the last time Yeshua sent spies, which is in Yeshua Perek Gimel, I believe. Do you remember what report they came back with? Remember what report they came back with? They came back with a report. Actually, it was Perek Bet. Vayishlach Yeshua benun minashitim shnayim minaglim. They came back with a report. What was the report? They said, they didn't say they hid in the mountains for 3 days because they were discovered right away, but they came back with the report. And they said, God has given this land into our hands, and all the nations of their hearts have melted away, we're ready to go. Yeshua sends spies now again, to the city of Ai. And he says to them, tell me what's next. They come back, and they say, don't weary the people, don't take them all up. 2,000, 3,000, you don't need more than that. It's a small town. You can take out 2,000, 3,000 is all you need. Don't take the whole people there. They're nothing. They're small. Small fry operation. So they send 3,000 people. Now, small fry operation means what? If you send 3,000 people, you're assuming that the fighting force of the city is what? 100 people? 200 people? 300 people? How many people died in the battle at the end of the people after they were successful in Perakat? How many people did they end up taking out? 12,000. He said the city 12, was 12. 000. The city was at least 12,000 strong.
No, 6,000. It's
okay,
the men
maybe
that
you want to argue the men and the women. We can debate that. 6,000, even 6,000. You're going to send an army of outnumbered 1 to 2 at minimum. Maybe 1 to 3. Even if it's 6,000, you want to send the men and the women. Okay, I hear it. Still, you've totally underestimated what you're seeing. So it's true they're afraid. It's true after Yericho there's a fear there. But how dare you suggest that we don't need more than an army that is by its very nature outnumbered 1 to 2, 1 to 3. And if that's the problem, I understand why the response that God gives Yoshua, beginning of Parakhet, is, Kach imcha et kol am hamilchama. Take everybody. That's how it should be. So clearly there's a problem here that is bigger than just the question of Acha. And that's what I'm trying to highlight. There's a second issue, which is how many soldiers do you send against a city like Ai? Do you rely on God's providence and help? Or are you taking this and saying, oh, it's a small operation, there's a couple of handful of people we can take care of it, send 50, 60, 100,000, 2,000, 3,000. You don't need more than that.
Why Yeshua didn't ask Hashem?
Wait. We'll get to everything. I'm going to ask the whole questions. We'll get to everything, one step at a time. First problem. The second problem is, again, so clearly there's more than just the cherem going on. And that you hear from the beginning of Parakhet. The other problem that we raised last week was Achan was one person. Why should all the people suffer because of one person? So the truth is that question the Gemara asks, but the Gemara offers a very interesting answer that I think is very telling in the broader scope of things. Here's the conversation in the Gemara. Gemara says, the context is a verse in the Torah in Parshat Nitzavim, Nistarit Lashem Elokeinu, V'niglot Lanu Levanenu Adolam, hidden things are to God, that which is revealed, that which we know about, we are accountable for. And there's dots on the word Hanistarot. Anyway, I'm going to skip the whole question. Amar Rabbi Nechemya, were we ever held accountable for things we don't know about? How could that be? Ela k'shem shelo anash ala nistarot, kach lo anash ala onshin. It's a machloket, but I'm less interested in the machloket as much as the final statement. It's just as we were never accountable for that which is hidden, so too we were not accountable for even that which we know about until we crossed over the yard. Once we crossed over the Yarden, we became a people, we became a nation, we became accountable for other people's mistakes. We swim together, we survive together, we sink together, right? We are one people. However, only that which we know about, which we are accountable for, the concept of Tochucha, the concept of Koyisola Revim Zebaza. Says the Gemara, El Achan, my time, Yanush, if that's the case, why in the case of Achan were they all punished? Gemara asks this question. Who was punished in the case of Achan? His wife, his children, they were all killed. So why were his wife and children killed? Why was his family killed? Says the Gemara, Mishum dahave yadebe ishto uvanav, because his wife and his children knew about it. So all the nation was punished because his wife and his children knew what Achan had done. Now, in and of itself, I take that literally in a face value. That is a difficult answer to suggest because, so take care of Achan and his wife and his children who knew about it and who were part of the cover-up. But why the rest of the people? So what I'm suggesting to you, and this is, again, what I have learned from my teachers, what I'm suggesting to you is that the issue is much bigger than just Achan and even Achan's family. Because look at the way it's described. Vayema'alu, this is the objective. This is not God saying to Yoshua, Chata Yisrael. In Pasuk Yud Aleph, I have God saying to you, to Yoshua, you know what? Chata Yisrael, Israel sinned. It's just Achan. Okay, but Israel's accountable. Israel's blamed. And Israel violated my covenant. It's just Achan. Okay, so we're going to blame all of Israel. Gam lakchu min acherim, they took the cherim. Gam ganvu, they stole and they denied and they hid. Who? All of Israel? No, just Achan. And maybe his family knew about it. But go back to the beginning. This is the objective narrator. This is the sefer, the Navi speaking. Vayimalu b'nei Yisrael ma'al b'cherem. All of Israel transgressed at the cherem. How? Achan took of the cherem and God was angry at Israel. Does that make sense? The impression one gets is that Achan didn't act alone. If the Gemara already says that his wife and children knew about it, fair assumption that they weren't the only ones. And that everybody knew about it. Or that the atmosphere was such that it was conducive to enabling Achan to, everybody thought about it, Achan did it. But that everybody thought about it meant that there's a much bigger issue here than violation of the cherem. There's an arrogance that has set in. There's a hubris that has set into the mindset of the people that says to them, we're entitled to the cherem of Yericho. What do you mean, no, don't take the cherem? Let's go back to the cherem. Remember, amongst the various reasons that I gave for why they weren't allowed to take of the cherem, the most compelling, I think, was the fact that God said, this was my battle. Here is the angel coming to tell them, this is my battle. You'll have other battles. You'll have spoils for other wars. This battle belongs to God. God will take the walls, blow the shofar, surround it with the ark, etc. This is miraculous. This is Yad Hashem. Once the walls came down, however, what did Bnei Yisrael do? Vayalu ish. Let's go back to the parak for a second. Parak Vav. After the walls came down, Vayaha'am vayitku b'shofarot, they blew the shofar. Vayariyu'am t'ragdola, they cried out, and the walls fell. Vayal ha'am ha'ira ish negdo. The people went in and they fought and they conquered and they destroyed. Meaning, we saw that and we said, okay, so that's call whatever you want to call it, wrap up, clean up. Right? God said, this is my battle. But they said, wait a second, we had a role, we fought, we participated, we're entitled. We're entitled. Only Achan took. Everybody thought about it. Because everybody had the same mindset. This is our battle. This is our war. This is our city. This is our country. This is our land. We can take what we want. This is our victory. Think about it on the heels of how many victories they've had so far in this context. Right? They've battled against Sichon. They've battled against Og. They've battled against Yericho. They've crossed the Yarden. This is now, right? There's nothing they can do wrong. They're literally from one battle to the next. And the entire atmosphere of arrogance and hubris has set into as a disease, as a virus that has now spread through the camp. So when Yeshua sends spies, we'll get to Yeshua's role in a second, but when Yeshua sends spies and the spies go to Yerich, to Ai, and they come back and they say, 6,000 soldiers. 12,000 people, 6,000 soldiers, doesn't matter. Oh, no big deal. 2,000-3,000 soldiers. Nah, clean up. It's a cakewalk. Why? Because we can do no wrong. We are undefeatable. The hubris that has set in the atmosphere, the arrogance, the self-confidence, off the charts, that has set in the aftermath of the victory of the Battle of Yericho, has sent Israel into a tailspin. And the result was, they thought they could do it all. 2,000, 3,000. And they were defeated. There's a parallel to the story of Amalek here, but I'm going to hold off on that because I don't know if we'll get to it time-wise, so we'll see if we add that at a later time. But there's a number of parallels to the story of Amalek. But I want to get to part two of this discussion, which is, I understand, okay, so I've explained a little bit of why the hubris has set in and the arrogance and why the people as a whole are accountable, and therefore there's a violation, there's a chet that's not just of Achan, but that's of all of Bnei Yisrael, Vayimalu Bnei Yisrael Bachir. What about Yeshua himself? Somebody a moment ago asked the question, why didn't he ask Urim V'Tumim? We don't find the Urim V'Tumim involved in these kinds of battles often, at least explicitly, except by David HaMelech. David is known, renowned for engaging the Urim V'Tumim, Shaul a little bit, David much more. So it's a hard question to answer. We find it a few places in Sefer Shoftim. It's a hard question to answer. But if I ask the question, what role does Yehoshua have in this story? Yeshua sent the spies. Yeshua could have said no. He could have avoided the sending the spies in the first place. When the people came back with the response that says, oh, we don't need to go there. Al yal et kol ha'am, don't take all the people. 2,000-3,000 is all you need. Al tiagasham, don't toil the people to go there. Yeshua could have said no. Yeshua could have said, that's not how we fight. What level of accountability sits on Yeshua's shoulders for this mistake?
He should have asked the question that you ask. How many people are they? Okay. A simple question.
Yeah, yeah.
He never did.
Lots of things he could have done. And again, we don't have the whole report. Like, we're getting snippets. We're getting a small piece of it. We don't have all the words that they spoke. It could have been a longer conversation, but I think the gist of it is as it's presented to us. But here the Gemara is really extraordinary. And let's start from the Radak. Radak, I'll come back to the Gemara in a second. Yeah, the Radak says, V'yesh drash. I don't have a translation of this. I'm going to have to translate it on the fly. V'yesh drash. There's a medrash. What's that medrash? We'll see in a second. Medrash is that Kadosh Baruch Hu said to Yeshua, Yeshua himself should have led the battle. He shouldn't send his army into war without him going. We'll see what that medrash is and whether it's pshat in the moment. However, says the Radak, Achar she'akatuv omer hatam ba'avur avon shel acherim nichshalu, ein lanu levakesh tam acher. Says the Radak, once the Navi has identified that the source of the chait is the cherem and only the cherem, we don't need to seek other reasons for this mistake. And so the Radak rejects this medrash and its implication that Yeshua on some level was accountable also for this mistake. However, as I just pointed out in the first half of the shiur, I don't think the text is, the pshat of the text is in line with what the Radak is saying, because the text itself seems to imply there's more here at stake than just Achan's violation of the Cher. So the Gemara addresses this question too, same Gemara, it's on the same page in Gemara and Sanhedrin, and says the following, and we're going to look at three different reasons for why Yeshua was held accountable. God's response to Yeshua was, Kumlach, get up. Get up for you, get up for your sake, get up. Kumlach, the word lach is a preposition that's attached to a lot of verbs in Tanakh. Darish Rabbi Sheila, Amar LeKadosh Baruch Hu, Shelcha Kashem Shalem, my dear Yeshua, your violation, your chait, your mistake here is bigger than theirs. Bigger than theirs? Yes, bigger than theirs. Why? Ani amarti be'yavrochem et ha'yarden takimu et avanim me'elol ha'gizim al ha'eval. I told you that on the day you cross over the Yarden, you shall take these stones and bring them to ha'gizim and ha'eval, write the Sefer Torah there, the words of the Torah there, and enact an entire ceremony of blessings and curses, which is what Yeshua does at the end of chapter 8. After the victory of Ai, he then goes straight to Yericho. Straight to Shechem. Says the Gemara, he should have gone straight to Shechem initially. Atem richaktem 60 mil. You diverted them 60 mil out of the way. In other words, God is saying to Yeshua, according to the Gemara, you're going from Yericho to Shechem. Here's the Jordan Valley. You go straight up and straight across, and you're there in a heartbeat. Who told you to take him to Ai? I told you to take him to Ai. I didn't tell you to take him to Ai. I told you to go, the day you crossed the Yarden, to go to Shechem. What business have you to digress into and to divert them to an entire battle that they have no business in yet? This is on you, Yeshua. And there's a lot of truth to that, because it's a sort of the same argument that we just said, that kind of arrogance and hubris that says, okay, we've conquered Yericho, now we're heading up to Shechem, march, 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 we'll take the mountain road, because there's a couple of cities on the way we can take care of. We'll take care of Ai, we'll take care of Sheol, we'll just march through and get to Shechem. Not so fast. There's a breed, there's a Torah, there's an acceptance of the Torah, there's a breed that has to happen, etc. Okay. That's question number one. Question number two, after, or opinion number two, after Rav Shila left the Beis Medrash, Rav got up, clapped on the Shulchan, and he said, I have a different explanation. He says, Yeshua could not have made such a mistake. The Torah said, the Navi says of Yeshua, that Yeshua was loyal to God and to Moshe all the days of his life. And God said to Yeshua, as I was with Moshe, I will be with you. If that's true, imken matamud lomar kum lach, so then what's he saying? Amalo, ataka ramta lehem. You didn't sin, but you caused the sin. You brought it about. Why? Because you decreed a ban on Yericho. Had you not decreed a ban on Yericho, they wouldn't have had an excuse to violate it. And therefore, in the battle of Ai that ensues in chapter 8, God says to Yeshua, let them take the spoils. We shouldn't make the same mistake twice. So two very different views on what the nature of the chait was. Was it that he took him to Ai when he didn't need to? Was it that he decreed a ban on Yericho when he didn't need to? And both of them, these approaches, seem to place the burden or the responsibility for what took place at some level, more or less, on the shoulders of, or at the feet of Yeshua. We can argue whether they're pshat on the parak. I don't think either one is pshat on the parak. First of all, I don't think that he was wrong in heading to Ai. There's no, Torah doesn't say anywhere you can't go to Ai. He will march through these hills into Shechem without a single battle along the way. Right? Whether or not he needed to go to Ai is arguable. It's along the way. And number two, we spent a great deal of time talking about the fact that the Cherem of Yericho may have been God's decree, not Yeshua's decree. However, that's neither of these is the Medrash that the Radak is referring to. Radak is referring to a much more devastating Medrash. And that's the Sifrei. And the Sifrei says the following. Where's the Sifrei? The Sifrei is here. On the verse, it's on the Pasuk in Devarim. The Pasuk in Devarim says, "V'tzavet Yeshua," Moshe is told by God, Devarim Paragimel, to command Yeshua and tell him, "Chazkeu v'amtzeu," be strong, courageous. Because he will go before this people and he will cause them, enable them to inherit or conquer the land. Says the Sifrei, Im manchilam, if he leads them in the effort to take the land, to inherit or conquer the land, nochalim, they will do so. Im lav enam nochalim, but if not, they will not inherit it. V'chein ata motze, kishalchu la'asot melchama ba'ai. So you find, when they went to battle Ai, 36 of the tzaddikim died. Remember, we had this whole discussion whether it's 36, half of the Sanhedrin, or 36, meaning the fighting force at the beginning. I'm not going to get into that for you now. They were defeated. Vayomer Hashem l'Moshe, Vayomer Hashem Yeshua kum lach, get up. Lamazet anathol panecha, why are you on your face? Says the Medrash, lo kach amarti l'Moshe rabecha, did I not say this to Moshe, your teacher? From the very outset. Im over lifnehem, if you go before them, overim, they will pass. The im lav, but if you don't go before them, im lav einam overim, they're not going to pass over. The yard. Im manchilam nocholim, im lav einam nocholim. If they're going to pass over, if you will lead them in the conquest, then they will be victorious. And here's the clincher. Shalachtem. You sent them into battle and you didn't go before them? Rashi borrows this, adopts this interpretation. Rashi quotes this on Chumash. On this pasuk, he quotes it verbatim. And he quotes the story of Yeshua. And he says, You sit in the office and you send my children to war? How dare you? And whereas the Radak rejects this because it's not pshat in the perek, I actually think it's very much pshat in the perek, and I think that that's why Rashi quotes it. Because that's exactly what the perek is dealing with. It's dealing not with Achan's violation of the cherem. Achan's violation of the cherem is the symptom, not the cause. The cause here is the arrogance and the hubris that came out of the Battle of Jericho that said, we can do anything. We are invincible. And therefore, the people said, we don't need to send all the people. We can send 2,000 or 3,000. And Yeshua says, great, great. Here's 2,000 men, 3,000 men. Go take out Ai. We're continuing to march to Shechem. Catch up to us when you're ready. Yeshua, that's not how you lead a battle. You are the manig. You are Ofer Lifneim. You go before them. The head of the army of Israel marches at the front of his men and says, Acharei. How dare you walk, take the people and sit back in your tents when you send 3,000 into battle? This will be the last and only time that Yeshua is not in the battlefront. That's exactly the lesson learned. And Yeshua is not less guilty than the arrogance of the people. This was a virus that percolated through the entire camp. And so when Yeshua tears his garments and he falls on his face and he says to God, why did you bring us over the Yarden that we should be destroyed? Yeshua understood the consequences of this defeat more than anybody else. And when God's answer is Chata Yisrael, they sinned. Israel sinned. It's much bigger than the violation of the Cherem of Yericho. Chata Yisrael, all of Israel. And also, Vegam, Avud Biti, Shitzivit Yotam. They violated my commandment. Which commandment? To go to war, to destroy the nations of Canaan, to wipe out the idolatry of Canaan. A lot of commandments I gave them that were all violated in this war. Vegam lakhu min acherem. And they took of the acherem. And they lied. And they put it in their, and they covered it up. And they were complicit. And it wasn't just one person. It was the entire nation. Because you've created a situation in which the arrogance is allowed to seep in. They could do no wrong. And that's very dangerous. The Torah warns about this. The Torah warned them about this. If you go back to Chumash in Dvarim, Perek Zion, two chapters, one after the other, you can hear Yericho, the battle of Yericho in one and the battle of Ai in the other. Two chapters, one after the other. First is Dvarim Perek Zion. Dvarim Perek Zion says, starting with Pasuk Yud Zion, if you say in your heart, the nations are bigger than I, how can I conquer them? I think it's important. I'm going to open parenthesis for a second. I don't like the translation here. Lohorish is not to inherit. Lohorish is not to dispossess. Lohorish is to conquer. In Tanakh, Lohorish, the word Lohorish is to conquer. So, and just FYI, translations can be misleading. Anyway, he goes on, he says, Lo tira mehem, don't be afraid of them. Remember what God did when he helped you leave Egypt. All the great wonders and miracles that God did for you. And God will send whatever that hornet or messenger or whatever it is before you, and he will remove the nations from before your midst. Don't be afraid of them. God is with you. And he will remove the nations. Slowly, mat mat. God will give them into your hands. Their kings will be delivered into your hands. You will destroy their name from under the heaven. They will not stand against you. You have a job to do. You have to destroy their gods. You have to not covet the gold and silver that is upon them and the cherim and the spoils. Because that will be a toeva, that will be an abomination. Don't bring abomination into your house. Lest you become a cherim like them. You hear Yericho in this parak? Jumps off the page. One parak later, God says to them, however, be careful. Be careful. Yisham melecha. Be careful. Lest you forget God. And forget the commandments that I give you. Lest you have eaten and you have full bellies. And you build yourself houses and you'll dwell therein. And you have herds and flocks and they'll multiply. And all that gold and silver and glittering stuff and the spoils you'll see for yourself. You'll have multiple, the stock markets will be good. And then the arrogance sets in. And forget that Hashem, your God, brought you out of the land of Egypt. And you will forget that God took you through the desert. A place of serpents and scorpions. The only reason they didn't attack you was because of the clouds. God brought you water out of the rock. God brought you the man from the heavens. And then you will say in your hearts, this power, this wealth, this all comes from the work of my hands. No, God gave you the power to make wealth. Don't forget that. To go from Yericho to Eyes, to go from Dvarim Perek Zion to Perek Chet. And the crisis is real. The crisis is real. The closest analogy, we've seen this in our own generation. We've seen this with our own eyes. And I generally avoid the comparison to contemporary history, but this one is too big to ignore. Because what you have in the transition between Yericho and Ai, or between Dvarim Perek Zion and Perek Chet, is exactly the hubris that you had between 1967 and 1973. And why the Yom Kippur War could happen. And this is the result of the whole conversation, the whole analysis, and the whole inquiry after the fact, etc. That there was, in the aftermath of the Six-Day War, we could do no wrong. The Six-Day War threatened the very existence of the people of Israel and the state of Israel, but the victory was so big, and so quick, and so large, and so clearly, demonstratively, by God's hand, we had no business taking credit for it. And yet, by the time 6 years later, we forget this, 67 to 73 is only 6 years. 6 years later, they can't attack us. We're too strong. The deterrence, they'll never, it'll happen. It won't happen. They can't happen. And the arrogance was real. The arrogance was real. And it brought down the leadership. It brought down Golda Meir. Even though she was absolved of accountability in the inquiry after this Yom Kippur War, but she resigned. It brought down the leadership, and it could have brought down Yoshua. That was precisely the issue here. The accountability isn't just for the people, but Yoshua is part of the people. And here I want to open one last comment, observation about Yoshua. In military terms, in leadership style, in power of prophecy, in every way that Moshe Rabbeinu was unique, Yeshua was you'll forgive me for saying so, Yeshua was in many ways an even greater leader than Moshe. The The loyalty he had from the people was never questioned. Never in all of Sefer Yeshua, with all the challenges that he has, successes, defeats, etc., they never come to Yeshua and they complain to Yeshua, as they complain to Moshe. Can you imagine if this had happened under Moshe's watch? What would have happened? This whole complaint, why did you cross us over the Jordan? Why did you bring us into the land? Why did you hand us over to the Canaanites to destroy us? Would have been better to stay on the other side of the Jordan? We would have heard articulated by, boom, the people. They never question Yeshua. Yeshua's leadership is extraordinary. But Yeshua, part of Yeshua's leadership is that Yeshua understands the people. He hears the heartbeats of the people. And so Yeshua is able to turn to God and articulate the very thoughts that are taking place in the hearts of Israel. That's his greatness. But his greatness is also to be able to then turn that around and say, okay, let's deal with the chait, deal with the problem, and then address the bigger question. So Yeshua is the one who, after they deal with Achan, Achan's a symptom. We have to get rid of the symptom. Correct. So they get rid of Achan and the spoils and the family, and we think that's done. It's not done. Because the cause of the problem isn't just Achan. It's the arrogance of overconfidence that emerged from the battle of Jericho. And so Perek Chet, Yeshua, has to lead them into battle. Yeshua has to say to them, I will lead the people. You take one group, you go into an ambush, and I will lead the people. And interestingly, Yeshua leads the people who flee before I. In other words, he sends 30,000 in the beginning of Parakhet to stand as an ambush. He takes the rest of the people with him as an attack force that will then turn and flee. Right? And then he has another group of people that's going to ambush the city and destroy it. And so you're going to have three groups. You're going to have the, we'll see the battle plan of this next class, but you're going to have one group that's going to lie in wait, another group that's going to attack the city face on and then run, turn and run. And that's where Yeshua is. That's the most dangerous group of all. But that's where Yeshua will be. And then there's a third group that's going to go into the city and set it on fire and raise it to the ground. So that when the people of Ai, who have left the city to chase Israel, will turn and see the smoke from behind them of the walled city of Ai defeated, they'll lose heart. And then they will, then the ambush and the group that was fleeing will turn together with the group that ambushed, and they will come together and destroy Ai. So it's a double ambush, if you understand what I mean. Right? It's a complicated battle strategy, but what I wanted to point out is Pasuk Yud-Chet in that parak. Vayomer Hashem al Yehoshua, Nete bakidona shebiyatcha el Ai, stretch out with the staff, the javelin, the spear, in your hand. Ki biyadcha etnena, I will give it into your hands. Vayet Yoshua bakidon asher biyado alayir. Yoshua stretched forth his hand towards the city. V'yarev kam neramim komo, which place the ambush came quickly. V'yarutzu kinutot yado. And they immediately ran as Yoshua stretched forth his hand. V'yavoi il v'yil kedua, and they attacked the city and destroyed it. V'yimaru v'yatzitu ot ta'ir be'esh. Then the people of Ai turned and they saw that the city was going up in smoke. They had no hands, they had no way to flee. The people who had been running, who had been fleeing, led by Yeshua, they turned and attacked, and the rest of the story as it goes. But there's this moment when the battle turns. How? When Yeshua takes his staff in his hand, lifts it up, and stretches it towards the city. Sound familiar? Look familiar? And is that not exactly the reverse of the role that Moshe had in the Battle of Amalek? when Yeshua was down in the fighting the Amalek on the ground, where was Moshe standing on the mountaintop with the staff of God in his hands, holding it up to Shemayim? There's a role of Yeshua that kind of takes on the role of Moshe Rabbeinu, even in the battle of Amalek, in this case, the battle of Ai. Yeshua is really an extraordinary personality. We're going to have to explore Yeshua more depth. But here we get a tip of the iceberg. On the one hand, he's part of the problem in Perek Zion. But he, and maybe more than anybody else, is able to lead the people and turn them around. And recognize the problem. Recognize the hubris. Recognize his own mistake. And so that Perek Chet is a tikkun, is a tshuva, if you will, for the mistakes of Perek Zion. So the Cherem is only one very small piece of the puzzle. The much bigger piece of the puzzle is not to allow the arrogance of victory from Perek Zion of Devarim to transform into Kochi v'yotzim yodi asali tachayel azeh Perek Chet, but rather to always remember that the greater the victory, the more we owe our success to God and not to our own strength. That was the lesson learned from Yehoshua, Perek Zion, and the transition to Perek Chet. I will stop sharing here. And I apologize for not taking questions during this year, but happy to do so now.
Okay. Usually when we fight, Hashem doesn't let us take too many people because then the Kohiva Otsem Yati comes in.
Correct.
So he sent a smaller group. And if they would have able to conquer Ai, it would have been more of a mess.
Correct. So the answer to that is, it depends. Number one, that's true. That would have been true had God said to them, take 2,000 people and I will be with you and you will be victorious. Had Yeshua said to the people, we're going to take a small group so that we don't think it's our own strength of our own hands. And I will lead them into battle, and we'll take the staff of with us, or whatever the answer would be. You could make that argument, Gideon style in Sefer Shoftim. What happened here is the exact opposite. The arrogance came first, and the choice of 2,000 men was driven by an arrogance that said, "We don't. This is not an enemy we need to be afraid of." They underestimated the strength of their enemy, mistake number one, and they underestimated God's role in the battle, mistake number two, and Yeshua didn't lead them into battle, mistake number three. The Cherem, the violation of the Cherem was the symptom. They took credit for the Battle of Jericho. It's my spoils. I can take it. I can handle it. It's mine. It belongs to me. I worked for it. That mistake led them to this, to Perek Zion and then eventually to Perek Chet. So what you're suggesting is true, but it has to have a context in which that message is conveyed. If it's driven by an underestimation of the enemy and overestimating of their own strength, then it achieves the same problem as, too large a fighting force. It's the same issue. Question. There was a question before I stopped, and I apologize for that if I didn't see who asked the question. But if there are questions, I'll be happy to address them.
Can I ask one?
Yeah, sure, Brian.
Yeah. So you talked about Yoshua's tikkun and tshuva that led to the second victory. Other than pleading on behalf of the people, is there any action that Yehoshua took as part of that tshuva process? Because rooting out Achan didn't cut it. You spent the last hour telling us why.
No, I think all the Perek Chet is the tshuva. All the Perek Chet, he leads the battle and he devises the battle plan that not to underestimate and to recognize God and to place the staff towards to raise the staff.
And he goes to the front.
I think all of that, including going to the front, especially going to the front, I think all of that is part of that sort of addressing the mistakes made of Perek Zion. There's a few places like this in Tanakh where you have more than one mistake going on. So there's an identifiable kind of theology mistake, and then there's others with both strategic and others. So we have to kind of look at the whole picture. I'm thinking particularly of the story of the Pelagish Begiva and the battles with Binyamin, other such examples. But in this case, the message was, take everybody and you lead them. And then essentially he has to set the clock back, because what this battle did was it did exactly what Amalek did. It poured cold water on boiling coals, or whatever the analogy is on the boiling water of the bathtub, right? It essentially demonstrated that we weren't invincible. You can't turn the clock back on that. That is now a fact. The Canaanites will unite, and the Canaanites will attack, and the Canaanites will not be afraid, and they won't be running away from us the way they were originally planned. Had Yoshua initially taken an army of 600,000 or several thousand, whatever the numbers are, if Yeshua had marched by Ai with the entire army, the people of Ai might have just picked up and run the same way that everybody else was frightened after the battle, after the crossing of the Yarden. We don't know. But we do know that from this point forward, they're going to have to fight. They're going to fight hard. And unfortunately, it's going to take years instead of days. And everything will change now, much like the story of Amalek. Everything changed. And that you can't, you can do tshuva, but you can't turn the clock back. The Battle of Ai really was an enormous tragedy that, for all intents and purposes, and say for Yeshua, we never recovered from. We did tshuva, but we never recovered from it. The battle will now take place slowly over time, tribe by tribe, city by city, instead of walking through Canaan and the nations of Canaan picking themselves up and leaving. It's a very different story. All right, we're going to have to stop here because we're past our time. But I thank you for listening. B'zrat Hashem, next week we will have a shiur on Pesach. And after that, we will reconvene after Pesach.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Have a wonderful day.